Okay, this is Eve Austin, and I am here with Roxanne Fry. Roxanne's also known as Roxy. We are in the green room at Third State, which is a bed and breakfast or boarding house. It is a guest house in Hudson, New York, and we are here as part of the Oral History Summer School program. And I'm going to ask you if you could introduce yourself, Roxy.
Hello, my name's Roxanne Fry. I live at 260 State at the guest house in Hudson, and I am the resident manager here.
Thank you. Okay, Roxy. So should I call you Roxy?
Sure.
Okay. Well, why don't we begin by having me ask you to tell me a bit about where you come from.
Well, I was born in Lansing, Michigan, and my family moved to Grand Rapids when I was very young, and that's a suburb in Michigan. It's a suburb city. And I lived there until high school, and then my family moved again to a small town in Michigan called Marshall. And I went to high school in Marshall, Michigan, and I went to college at Michigan State University.
Can you say a little bit more about Michigan?
I like growing up in Michigan, but it's economically depressed right now because of the auto industry and everything left, and there's a limitation on jobs, and most of the reason I moved away from Michigan was for job opportunities. I'm from a family of six children, and it's split right down the middle. Two boys, one girl stayed in Michigan, and two boys, one girl left Michigan. So half of us stayed there with the family, and half of us left. And all of us that left, you know, went to college and got professional jobs. So that's probably why we left.
You were one of those who left and got a professional job.
Yes. Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I went to work for Virginia Tech in Virginia.
Say a little bit more about Virginia Tech.
I was an agriculture extension agent, which means I worked for Virginia Tech, but I worked in a little county on the Chesapeake Bay called Matthews, Virginia. And basically, agriculture agent's responsibility is to work with farmers and teaching them about the latest research that comes out of the university, but also having 4-H clubs for children, which was actually my favorite part of the job. And teaching master gardeners, doing home gardening classes, and that's kind of what I did there.
So you said that was your favorite part of the job.
It was 4-H with kids, yeah. It was fun, fun, fun.
Yeah, can you say some more about that?
Well, I kind of did a new twist on 4-H because I had been a Girl Scout leader as well before in Michigan. So then I kind of was like, let's update 4-H because not all kids want to do agriculture. So we had to set up some new programs in 4-H, like after-school programs, so that kids could go right from school into the after-school program, and I did it right at the school, and it was very successful. We had some of the highest numbers in 4-H in the state of Virginia, in a small county, and it's because we cooperated and worked with the school on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, how did you know that the kids needed an update?
I did a survey with the kids, and I asked them, my daughter was in eighth grade, so I started with her class and her teacher. His wife was one of my master gardeners, so I knew them from church and as well as through master gardeners, so I worked with them first. And I did a survey with the kids, and I asked them, you know, what kind of programs would you like to see for 4-H. You know, I listed some that they could check off, and then I did a fill-in-the-blank one where they could write in what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So.
And it worked.
Yeah, I came up with some new programs, and I also worked with a home economist in my office, and we did a couple of classes together. So we did a baking class, which she came and helped do that, and we did a more attractive you for girls, and I had this woman that does color analysis come in, and I had a hairdresser come in, and you know, we had different people, we had adult volunteers come in, and the other thing I did different with my 4-H program was that I did very specific start and end time. And I did like 9-week programs, so the adult volunteers knew they were only signing up for 9 weeks, and it was not like a forever program, which normally 4-H is. And I felt like it burns out the kids, and it burns out the adult volunteers because they get tired of it, the same thing over and over again. But I feel like 9 weeks was a real good little time period to, you know, run a program. Mm-hmm. Although I will say that I did traditionally still have a horse club. And because you have to, because there are some kids who are in 4-H for their animals. And so I did do some traditional animal clubs, but as far as the after-school program, that was a totally different type of program.
So you had the insight to know that even though you needed to stick with some of the traditional stuff,
things, we had to update and modernize some of the other programs to get more kids involved. And there was a need for it. There was a need for some type of after-school program. Mm-hmm. So we chose to do it with 4-H.
Mm-hmm. How was it that your college education prepared you for that career, that job?
Well, my master's degree is in agriculture education. So I took that... I took agriculture production for my bachelor's and agriculture education for my master's, and that's what I trained to be and to do.
And how long did you do that?
Well, in Virginia, it was 3 years, and then Reaganomics came in and laid us off. It was a across-the-board layoff in extension education because of the budget cuts. So after I did that, then I had an opportunity because my graduate advisor... Dr. Bobbitt, Frank Bobbitt, he had helped start the College of Education, Agriculture Education, in Jamaica, West Indies. So I had that connection, and I was able to go there for an interview, and I took the job teaching and training agriculture agents for the government of Jamaica for 2 years. 91 and 92. So that was the next step, kind of taking what I had learned from being an agent to training other people to do the same thing.
That sounds like a big step.
Yeah, it was, but it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it a lot. And
what was life like in Jamaica?
Rough. It's kind of rough. I mean, I mostly stayed on the campus, and I lived in, you know, staff housing. But Jamaica's kind of a rough country. You cannot travel anywhere by yourself if you're an American, and particularly if you're a female. So I found out that it's a culture that I probably would not choose to live in again.
So were you alone there?
I had my daughter, my youngest daughter, with me. Mm-hmm. Right, so... It was an interesting experience that I appreciate. I don't know if I would repeat it, but...
Yeah. So you've mentioned your daughter. I think, was it the same daughter that you had mentioned? That you?
No, I have 3 children. I have a daughter, a son, and a daughter. So.
Then, so that was Jamaica, And now, how did that lead you to where we are today? I'm sure there's
I've had a long history of jobs and moving for jobs and moving for my children. And I can't even list them all, and I don't really want to either. But we'll just say that I changed careers when I came back because there was no availability of jobs in agriculture extension anymore because of the layoffs, and it was still in effect after 2 years. You know, there was no opportunity there. So I changed careers, and I went into management for working with a company called Mentor with developmental disabilities. So I did that for 8 years in Tennessee, and then I went to Florida. With,
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
So I did that for quite a while, and then after that I had a few jobs here and there, and then I, in 2007, I went to work for in the National Park and Blue Ridge Parkway. It's Pisgah Inn up on the Blue Ridge Parkway, and I was a retail manager, assistant manager there. They have two stores, and I guess like a year and a half ago, it's a seasonal job, which like ends November 1st and starts April 1st. So my daughter and her fiance got this place, and I came here to help them with it, to manage it with them. So I never really quit or was fired. Technically, I'm still employed by Pisgah and on the Parkway, and I can go back if I want to. But I kind of, feel like probably going to stay in the New York area to spend more time with my grandchildren.
Yeah. So I'm going back to the thing you mentioned when you first changed careers, Florida, and working with developmentally disabled folks for like 7 years. So was that a big change, or had similar work?
Well, it's still, I guess like when you're trained to be an educator, you can cross over different jobs, and you're still kind of working with training people. Mm-hmm. And I was, hiring training staff and also working with training task analysis for the actual clients themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like you said, you've done a variety, such a wide variety of things. You've been in so many places. What's that like?
And I didn't even mention all the other places. I went to Denver. I lived in Boulder for a while and worked, a lot of times I'll have like a part-time job or two part-time jobs or a full-time job and a part-time job, and it just varies. So I probably had like 25 jobs or 30 jobs in my life.
Yeah.
And moved around for different jobs and different situations, or to go spend time with my children.
What's that been like for you? To have 25 jobs, and
it's interesting. I kind of like the ability to be able to cross over into different fields, and I think I would advise if people really in college want to have a degree where they can do that. Education is a good field because education falls into such a broad range of opportunities in education. And really, you need to go on and get your master's degree. That's what I advise. Like, just go the next 2 or 3 years and finish it up while you're doing it. It makes a huge difference in the job market when you're marketing yourself and interviewing for jobs to have a master's degree.
Good advice.
Yeah.
So in terms of Hudson, then, you've been here, it sounds like...
A year and a half. Because I left in November... Not last year, but the year before, when I finished at Pisgah Inn and came here. And they had just opened this place, and it was only two apartments at that time. That's all they had open.
Okay. What's a typical day like for you here?
There isn't really a typical day. Because, the weekends are mostly full and busy, and the house is full, and everybody's here. It's real busy. By Monday or Tuesday... Most people have left, And then it's time to like clean and get everything ready for the next group coming in the next weekend. But sometimes there's people in the middle of the week too, especially in the summer. Like people are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. I keep up with it all the time. Mm-hmm. Who's coming, who's going, clean which room and whatever. But now that we pretty much have the whole building and there's 12 beds and lots of work to do, I have there's a gal that comes on Sundays now and she helps me clean the apartments downstairs because it's too much to flip. You know, 12 bedrooms in one day for one person is too much. I was starting to get exhausted, so I had, you know, we had to come up with a solution of, you know, hiring someone to come one day a week.
And the rest of the time it's just
you? Yeah, it's just me. Most of the time.
That sounds like a big right. job.
Yeah.
As the place has grown.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But the hours are flexible, and I'm used to working in hospitality, so... You know, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting to meet different people from, people come from all over the world to stay here, actually. Mm-hmm. Particularly, like, Australia, France, England, those three countries. Seems like the majority of people coming from overseas come from one of those countries. I mean, there's other people here and there, obviously, but mm-hmm. a lot of Australians.
Do you know why there are a lot of Australians here in Hudson?
I don't know why. I guess they, you know, they're browsing online. They want to come to New York. But then, like, Hudson is becoming the happening place. I don't know. You know, it's like, it is a tourist destination now.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about Hudson compared to some of the other places you've lived and worked?
Well, I've lived in Boulder, and I've lived in Asheville. Hudson is a little bit like that, but it's smaller, obviously, venue than what those cities are, but just as far as, like, the tourist aspect of it, it's not a real small town, actually. There's very few people that live in Hudson that are actually from Hudson anymore. They've all sold out, or... The ones that stayed are very bitter, and they don't really want to make friends with people that moved here because they feel like they're taking over their town. It's really difficult to make friends in Hudson if you live here. Hmm. And that aspect of it, I think, is very different from where I've lived before. I've always had a lot of friends with the people I work with or neighbors or, you know, always have... A good handful of friends, you know. Here in Hudson, I've made almost no friends at all in a year and a half. Because everybody's transit, coming and going, or the people who live here don't really want to be friends with people that came here. Because they feel like they're taking over their town, taking their town away, which is probably true. We are. Mm. Buying up all the property and renovating it and turning it into a tourist business. It is true. That is what's happening. I mean, that is the renovation that's happening in Hudson.
Can you say more about the bitterness that you have experienced or how you've experienced it?
Well, you know, I've had a few people tell me, oh, you're one of those people who came here, huh, and bought our houses up or whatever. You know, I've heard that two or three times from people, or people say, you know, people are coming from across the bridge. They make a big deal about that. Everyone's coming across the bridge and buying up Hudson. What they really mean is they're coming from the city or they're coming from somewhere else. But for some reason in Hudson, this thing about the bridge is real important to them. Like, either you're from this side of the bridge or you're from the other side of the bridge. They make that clear distinction in their minds, you know, about where you're from.
And you're from the other side of the bridge.
Yeah, I'm from the other side of the bridge, obviously. Mm-hmm. And my daughter and Kylie, the owner as well, they're from Brooklyn, you know, so they're from the city, which is even the next step, like people coming from the city to buy up Hudson. You know, people from Hudson are bitter about that. Mm-hmm. Because when they're, you know, they might sell a property, but they can't buy another one. They can't afford to buy anything else in Hudson. They can't stay in Hudson. They have to move away or move out of town or, you know, so.
So you sound very, you know, you're very aware of it. You're kind of intellectually, you're seeing it.
I felt people's little bit of their little hostility towards me a little bit when they find out I'm not from Hudson, or that my daughter and son-in-law bought this property and turning it into a guest house, you know, in their mind, like, that is the epitome of what they don't like about what's happening with Hudson. Now, all the other people who live here, of course, are people who came here and bought things. You know, it's like you got all these businesses downtown that are, like, super expensive that you can't even afford to go to if you live here, because, the prices in the stores are set for tourists. They aren't set for local people at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I wonder what that's like for you to be kind of in the middle of all of that.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm sort of, you know, passing through Hudson. I don't plan on staying here and making this my home at all. I would never want to stay and live in Hudson permanently. No, it's not that kind of town. It's not a fun town to live in, not at all. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go to the Basilica if an event's happening, $30. You know, just to get in. I've never even went to the Basilica because it costs so much money to get in. Just to wander around and look at stuff, it costs $30, you know, that kind of thing. Or Club Helsinki, I never go there because same thing. It costs you $40, $50 just to get in to listen to music. Or if you buy a drink, it's $10. Or, you know, I mean, it's like definitely set for expensive for tourists, you know.
So is it hard for you being here then, day to day?
No, it's not hard because it's temporary. You know, everything is temporary in this life anyway, so that's my take on life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know my purpose here, and I'm fulfilling that purpose of helping my daughter and son-in-law to get this place going, but eventually I'll move on. I'm not going to stay here.
Mm. Do you already have a sense of how long, or you'll know when it's time?
Yeah, I'll know. Things will start to wind down, or other opportunity will present itself for me, or something will happen that will shift, and then I'll know.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard other people have in Hudson have a similar experience that you're having?
Probably not, because I haven't made very many friends here in Hudson.
Yeah. How about your daughter, or maybe you can't speak for her experience?
No, not really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hmm.
She stays mostly in Brooklyn, and her fiance Kylie, he stays mostly here. So, you know, he's more in charge of running this place than she is.
Mm-hmm.
He has more free time.
Mm-hmm. So if I got it right, really your purpose is to help out your daughter.
And, yes,
and
right.
So that sounds like that's
exactly
pretty important to you to help her out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about your work life. Other areas of your life that you think are important to talk about, or that you'd like to talk about or share from any of the other places that you've lived? Or,
well, I will say, wherever I live, I'm kind of seek out, to spiritually enlighten myself with where I'm at and what I find in the area where I'm living. And, you know, like right now I'm taking Tai Chi class at the community college, and I go visit Peace Village, which is up a retreat center. It's a Brahma Kumaris retreat center up in the Catskill Mountains. And I've been there probably for 3 retreats, and I'm going to take another one in August. And then there is another place out by Catskill, and it's a temple, it's a Buddhist temple of Kuan Yin, which I actually have been studying about Kuan Yin for some time. She is the only female Buddha, at least the known female Buddha, of compassion. And so the only temple and retreat center for the is in North America, is here. It's just like 10 miles down the road. So I go there frequently just to do meditation and, you know, to offer gifts and oblation to Kuan Yin, the Buddha of compassion. And I actually am a Buddhist myself. I have passed through many religions in this lifetime, and I feel like I'm really here on a spiritual journey. And so wherever I do live, I seek out, you know, to spiritually increase my awareness and knowledge of different religions and different people, and just to see what they're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that, I mean, that's connected to a little while ago when you said something to the effect of life is temporary.
Right.
Anyway.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Which is very Buddhist philosophy, right. You know, that this is everything is temporary in the universe. It's kind of a Buddhist thing. But, I started in Christianity and moved on from there. And I've studied yoga, and I've studied, Hinduism, but really Krishna. And just a lot of various, all over wherever I live, I pursue to try to study and spiritually enlighten myself.
It's kind of amazing that in this little area of Hudson, you found the only place in North America. You said that
for both Kuan Yin and the Brahma Kumaras,
yeah.
They both have retreat centers right up here in the Catskill Mountains.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you know, wherever you go, whatever state you find yourself in, you can look around and you will find some kind of spiritual activity going on, and you can pursue it and experience it and learn more. And so that's what I try to do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a third one, which I recently found out about and I haven't went to yet, but I'm going to, which is the Wan Buddhist Temple. It's out by Claverack, and I haven't went there yet, but that's my next step that I'm going to take.
I drove past that today.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you began as a Christian.
I did. I started out in Michigan as a Christian, but you know, I expanded my spiritual experience to encompass, you know, all religions and try to figure out not what the differences are, but what the similarities are. And I found there's a lot of similarities in a lot of the religions of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they're fighting about, but, you know, basically they all teach about love and forgiveness and compassion, or just no matter what word you use, that's what they teach. So I just wish that they'd all practice it. But somehow they managed to twist it around and turn it into some kind of fighting over whatever their way of practicing their religion or worshiping God or the name they want to use for their God or whatever, they fight about that. So I just find that so, you know, incredible that they all have the same message, but they're fighting each other.
Mm-hmm. When you go back to, I don't know if you do go back to Michigan, but if you go back to Michigan, do you have acceptance around practicing Buddhism or, you know, exploring other religions besides the religion that you were raised in?
Oh, acceptance with my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I do,
yeah.
You know, because pretty much my friends and family, I put it out there, they know me, they know who I am,
mm-hmm.
They know I'm on this spiritual journey, they just always want to know, where have I been and what have I been doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's usually their question they have for me.
Mm-hmm.
But even when I lived there and I was in college, I was already, you know, doing yoga. I was already a vegetarian. I was already doing, you know, organic gardening. And, you know, so I was already on that path right from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure that we do talk about?
No, do you have any more questions?
Well, we can pretty much talk about anything that you would like. Let's see. It's almost time, but I guess I just want to make sure that, you know, you've had the chance to say anything that you might want to say.
I think I have. I don't know. Okay. I think I have.
Yeah, well. Well, I want to thank you for being my first interviewee, narrator, otherwise known as narrator. And what I'm going to do is sign us out and say this is Eve Austin, and we are at Third State Guest House. I'm here with Roxanne Fry, and it's June 28th, 2016.